Come on, Wendy.
I was just going to say, I love TV again. There was a time that I just wasn't really watching that much.
You're
and
back
now,
into it?
There's too much.
Alexander Zalbin is here from The Decider. Alexander, you heard Wendy. There's too much TV. What do we do?
Just stop watching it. Just get out of the house. Go
Gotta
to the
stop.
Woods. Hide. It's coming for you.
Yep.
It's coming. They're going to start streaming things on rocks and trees here.
Don't let it happen,
excellent.
Wendy. All right, here's question number one to you, Alex. Every time I see a show now, we're a couple of weeks into the new season. Most shows have premiered, but not all. But I keep hearing in ads, they go, the new number one hit on television, or the best drama on television. More people mm-hmm. watched our show than any. What truly is, of all the new shows, what has moved the needle the most, would you say?
You know, it's still early going, like you said. I think last week we talked about Manifest. That had a surprisingly huge debut. I think it was 10.3 million in the initial viewing, not even with streaming or anything like that, which is pretty enormous given the fracturing of the landscape nowadays. But the thing is that I think everybody knows this, but they're finagling the numbers, right? It's you're talking about some things are, okay, this is the biggest debut. If you add 3 days on streaming, plus you're only looking at the segments of the audience from 18 to 49 that watches on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. So that's how they can trump these numbers. But
don't say Trump.
Ultimately, yeah, Manifest is the only one that really seems to be breaking out, and everything else is just kind of doing okay.
Did that do as well the second week? I like it. I'm sucked into Manifest. Did it do as well?
You know, I'm not 100% sure of the week two numbers yet. I can definitely look those up to you, but I think it's the sort of thing that it's going to hold on, particularly because it did debut so strong. People will be very interested in following that mystery, so we'll see what happens.
They always say, though, that that's the telltale sign of a true hit is, despite having incredible numbers in week one, it's the second or the third week that really is mm-hmm. the telltale.
Yeah, and particularly with the amount of TV and movies and everything else coming out, I think we're gonna very soon see that things are going to drop off even quicker. Particularly, some of the big premieres haven't even happened yet. You know, it used to be back in the day, post Labor Day, you'd see everything would be coming out. Now there's a ton of the CW is starting to premiere all of its stuff this week and next week. There's a bunch of other big premieres coming up. So we haven't even seen the Conners yet, the Roseanne reboot, which is definitely going to be huge and suck up a lot of the air in the room. So we'll see what happens.
And there's a few shows that have done well in the past, like Blacklist is one. I don't think the premiere of Blacklist has taken place until January or something this year, right?
Yeah, particularly, again, with streaming and the amount of shows coming out, people are starting to move very, very slowly to more of almost a two-season launch, I would say. It used to be you'd take a break in December or so and then come back, but now they're looking at it more as a binge model, as we're going to release 13 episodes, sometimes even 20 episodes, all in a season without any break, so you can get people talking about it. Because really, to get back to your point about that week two drop, the thing that kills a hit new hit show almost more than anything else is that weeks-long break. You've seen that with the first one that came to mind. There was a show called Revolution. It was a sci-fi show,
yeah.
Very similar to Manifest, I think, where it had these ongoing mysteries. It debuted very strong. People were really excited about it. They thought it was going to be really huge. Then it took a couple of months off, and when it came back, nobody watched it.
Explain for a second. You mentioned something about the ratings, about a three-day rating. So if mm-hmm. I understand this correctly, they rate a television show three ways now. People watching at the time that it's aired, and then there's like a 24-hour mm-hmm. turnover, and then there's like a 72-hour turnover. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's even more than that. I mean, there's live plus three, which is essentially people watching rebroadcasts of the show, as well as streaming numbers from almost any platform they can pull those numbers from. But then there's live plus seven as well. And when you go to networks like, say, Freeform, I think, is a very good example of this, where they have a much younger audience, and a younger audience that doesn't really watch TV live. So the broadcast is fine, and of course they want to say X number of people watch this in the opening night, isn't this huge? But really what they're looking for in the long run is how are people talking about it? Are they telling their friends, you missed this, and then 7 days later they watched it? So every network has its own metrics that it's looking at and its own way of looking at things, certainly with the broadcast networks, NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox, Advertising is such a huge part of it, and they lose a lot of that through streaming. So the actual live views are much more important. But when you start going to cable or premium cable, and definitely for streaming, that becomes less important, and it's more about how many people are watching it over time.
You mentioned viewership drops on the second week, and sometimes viewership drops throughout a season of a show. I'm talking about The Walking Dead. That has really fizzled. I'm still watching it. My son Dylan, who turned me on to it, has not watched it. But with the final episode of Rick, which, why do we have to know? Why couldn't they have just let us find out? But it's getting back to its roots, isn't it?
So I've seen the first couple of the episodes of the new season, and as you know, I'm a big Walking Dead fan. I've watched every episode of the show. I totally get people have jumped off board over the past two seasons. It's been very violent, a lot of gunplay. The Negan storyline went on for far too long. But going into the season, putting the Rick Grimes thing aside for the moment, they've got a new showrunner for the first time in a really long time, Angela Kang. She's been a writer on the show for a really long time. And it feels new and fresh. It really almost feels like a new show in a way. For the first time in the show's history, there's a new credit sequence, which looks and feels totally different. Character dynamics are very different. And it's a lot more about rather than how do we survive in this world, it's we have survived in this world. What's next? What do we build back? How do we reclaim a world that's been taken over by zombies and nature?
And we need really to know that when this happens, we need to know how to rebuild.
So true. So true. I don't think that the producers of the show, Alex, would want us to know that Rick was dying out or that this character was going to die out, but it almost became a leaked story, right? I mean, it's better for us to be surprised.
Yeah, I agree with you. It is always a bummer when you know, oh, this person has a bullet, whatever it's called, a bullet. I'm completely
blind. On his back.
Bullseye. Thank you. I don't know why my brain fried there on his head. So that's a bummer. But I think two things happened with Rick, right? One, yes, there's leaks. They knew this was going to get out. They knew people would find out about his last day. So instead, they decided to come out front and say, yes, we're not going to tell you how this happens, but this does happen. But then the other thing is it becomes must watch. Even people who have tuned out for the past couple of seasons, you're going to want to know how Rick Grimes goes out. So it becomes an advertising opportunity to draw people back into the show, which is smart in its own right.
I guess.
Alexander Zalbin's our guest, managing editor at Decider.com, a great website if you like television, if you like entertainment. We'll take a quick break and then more discussion. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Bill and Wendy on WGN. Our guest is Alexander Zalbin, the managing editor of Decider.com. Alex, one other quick Walking Dead note, and then we'll move on to other things. Every week in the credits of Fear the Walking Dead, they say Maggie Grace. And I know Maggie Grace from Lost. She was the rich girl on Lost, right? And then I kept thinking, when are they going to put her on the show? They keep saying her name in the credits, but they're not putting her on the show. And then I find out that Elle, the girl who drives the giant arsenal wagon, that's Maggie Grace. Mm-hmm. She looks so different. I didn't recognize her.
Yeah, and she's great on the show. I think they've done a really good job of rejuvenating that cast and bringing in new blood. Jenna Elfman's pretty good on it, too.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yep.
I never got into that. I watched maybe the first season of Fear the Walking Dead. And
Didn't it do it for you?
No, I didn't. They weren't beloved characters like they were on Walking Dead, and I kind of bailed.
Right. Let's talk about a show called Big Mouth. I like the people behind Big Mouth. What is it?
So this is an animated comedy on Netflix. The second season is debuting today. It's from Nick Kroll, John Mulaney. Some of the other voices are Jesse Klein, Jason Mantzoukas, Jenny Slate, Fred Armisen, Maya Rudolph, Jordan Peele. It is an animated comedy about a bunch of seventh graders who are dealing with puberty. And it is the raunchiest, most over-the-top show you've ever seen, while at the same time really saying some very poignant things about the experience of going through puberty, both from the male and female perspective. It's definitely not something you should watch in the office or where anybody can see you, because there's nudity, there's sex, there's absolutely everything. You will not believe what you're seeing at most points, but it's also very funny and very worth watching.
I love both those guys. John Mulaney was a writer on Saturday Night Live, and he's really become, if you listen to any of the comedy channels on satellite radio, he's one of the best guys on there. Nick Kroll is really funny. So it's Big Mouth. And where can people see this? On Netflix?
On Netflix, second season debuts today.
All right, I have two favorite shows. One is Better Things with Pamela Adlon, who I believe is Bobby Hill's voice on King of the Hill. I love that show. Do you know when the new season starts with that? On FX, I believe.
Good question. I don't know, actually. I think it got a little tricky because Louis C.K. was behind the scenes, even though Pamela Adlon is... said he has nothing to do with the show. But I haven't really heard anything about a third season at this point. Presumably it would be at some point soon, but because it's so artistically driven by her, it's very much up to her when it happens.
And has anyone picked up The Mick with Caitlin Olsen? Please tell me yes. Come on, they pick up Last Man Standing. Why don't they pick up The Mick?
Because they know you like it.
I know. I'm sorry. It's a fantastic show. She's wonderful on it. If you are looking for your fix, she's back on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia this season, which is as hilarious as ever. So you can check her out there. But hopefully she'll get another sitcom soon.
Has anyone picked up Laverne and Shirley?
Yeah, it's coming back with an all-male reboot.
All right, I'm in. I can't wait. Doctor Who has been on forever. I'm not kidding, forever. But now, for the first time ever, there's a change in Doctor Who. What's the change?
It's a big change. There's actually been 13 actors that have played the Doctor. And for the first time this Sunday, the show is getting a female lead. If you've never seen it before, it's from England. It's a time-traveling, space-traveling show. And it's sort of like James Bond in terms of them recasting actors all the time. This is the first time, though, that a woman has been in the lead. Jodie Whittaker, who you might recognize from the English version of Broadchurch, is the lead there. There's also a new showrunner, new cast. Without getting into any spoilers, excuse me, I've seen the first episode, and it's wonderful. If you've never seen the show before, you can jump right in. They explain absolutely everything. It's like a new pilot. If you have seen the show before, excuse me again, you'll be crying by the end.
It's great. Now, here's a question, since you compared it to James Bond. Anytime they talk about changing anything about James Bond, like what if there's an African-American James Bond? What if it's a female James Bond? Everybody goes crazy and says, no, that would ruin James Bond. Is there an uproar about Doctor Who being a woman, or is everybody accepting of it?
You know, it's funny. You would expect there would be, but the only person who really said, no, Doctor, the Doctor should not be a woman, was the previous showrunner who came out and said that. But everybody else, when they find out, really felt like, you know what, it's about time. And all of the previous actors who played the Doctor said, this is great, she's great, she's going to do a wonderful job. She's good friends with David Tennant, who's one of the most popular actors to play the Doctor, and he thought she'd be brilliant. It's definitely something that fans will take adjusting to, but to the credit of the premiere, it jumps right into it. It certainly recognizes the fact that she is a woman, but it doesn't spend a lot of time on it, and she owns the role completely in her own way. It's again, it's rather wonderful.
Alex, in all the TV you've ever watched, have you ever seen a show's production values improve as dramatically as Doctor Who's? When you see the episodes from the 60s or the 70s, it looks like something a bunch of kids made in their basement, and now it's really high-tech.
Well, this is one of the other things that I think is fantastic about this new episode is they have drastically increased the effects over time, but this new episode is a dramatic leap forward. The monsters look better. They have maybe the scariest villain they've ever had in the history of the show. The action is huge. It's great. It definitely feels like it's up to 2018, and it's wonderful to see.
And before we talk to you next week, we will have seen the season finale of Better Call Saul. So that's coming up on, is it Monday or Tuesday? I can never remember.
Monday.
Okay. That is the season finale. It's heating up. I can't wait for it.
I'm so nervous about it at this point. I don't know if folks listening have been keeping up with the show, but there's
Wait, I have to take my headphones off for just a second because I'm two episodes back. Hold on. Go ahead.
He's not going to spoil anything.
Okay.
Surprising characters that are in danger that I did not think were going to be in danger by the end of the season, and I wake up every morning worried about them and what's going to happen.
Oh, wow. That says a bunch. It's the always worried Alexander Zeldman. I've never seen the side of you before, Alex. I'm scared for you. Managing editor of Decider.com. It's a great website, Decider.com. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on Friday.
All right, sounds good. Thanks,
hopefully
guys.
You won't be nervous then. It'll be post-finale.
I'll calm down.
All right, good. Thank you.
All right, a quick break, some news, and then
actually, no break.
What?
If I can
no
just
break.
Say yes.
This is insane.
We are going to go right to the news.